Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
I'm locked in. I'm here for my team.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score. Reasonable, level-headed, informed sports talk for your workday.
Is it the omen to begin this week?
Less than a minute to go.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Valentine.
No.
Oh, no.
No. No.
That is not the shot at that moment.
That's a horrible shot.
Dan Bernstein.
CBSSports.com. Bulls Denzel Valentine submits candidate for worst shot of NBA season.
That's Steph Curry range right there. Come on.
Right after you let it go, yeah, that probably wasn't the best shot selection right there.
Yeah.
Layla Rahimi.
Sometimes you get to watch Zach LaVine. And sometimes you think, you know, I can take that shot too. No, you can't.
No.
No.
Can we please use that for every dude who tries to roll up on my Instagram, LinkedIn, or various other social medias? No, you can't.
No, you can't.
You know, I can take that shot too. No, you can't.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show.
With Bernstein and really Mahimi.
9 a.m. to noon.
You know, he just plays. Denzel just kind of plays, man. He just has a feel for it.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Flex out of Denzel!
Perfect. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And yeah, we're popping on right now without transition, doing the proper start to a show, because I don't mean the other is improper. I just mean this is sort of holding to the form when we say 9 to noon. Here we are.
And yeah, what the heck, man?
Right. It's because Ryan Pace is ostensibly set to meet the media, and We'll talk about what we expect or don't expect from these. We've had enough experience to know that nothing's going to be said. He's going to use the fact that he's talking as an excuse to not say anything. Well, please respect the fact that we're close to the draft, therefore I can't answer any of your questions, and I can't take responsibility for any of my own actions. Are we done here? Thank you. Good day, sir. That's probably what we're in for, but we roll on it nonetheless, and we'll turn it around for you in case there is some news. We are going to talk to Craig Calcaterra at 10 o'clock. He is our national baseball correspondent. We'll do Who's Your Guy at 10:20. It was a fun little debut of it on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show yesterday. We've got a lot more names lined up for you, so we can scout them midday midway at 10:40. Jace Coburn, the Portland State Vikings basketball coach, who is extremely mentally tough because he suffers. He's going to join us at 11, and he's going to recruit you, the potential Portland State Viking. And then we'll see what happens in the thereafter, heading up to our 45 thing in the 11:45 segment, as we always do. We always line up some little fun thing for you there. 312-644-6767 is the Score listener line. It's powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. If you want to email us, you send it to BernsteinRahimi@670thescore.com. And there you can also listen to us live because we stream at 670thescore.com. We are textable via the text zone that's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at RosenHyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter's at BernsteinRahimi. She is at Layla Rahimi. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Make sure you have downloaded the Odyssey app. That way you can stream the score on your mobile devices. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. And there's the Twitch stream. I'm looking at it right now. It's always fun. Come hang out and be part of the conversation. You can see what we're doing. You can see many of our guests via Twitch. That link is twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. And there are all sorts of funny little faces known as emotes that color the conversation there as well. That's directed by Connor O'Donnell and Brian Gertz. They also moderate the chat. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. Jordan Malley is the guy stitching all the sound together on the board for us. So the Bulls actually picked up a game in their version of whatever this playoff race is, trying to work their way into this play-in. And they now sit a game out. They had to have it last night. They had to. And they did. Very strange game. If you were to just look at the box score, you'd wonder, how do they win this? You know, they didn't really get to the line all that much. They turned it over 18 times to the Heat's 5. And this really was a lot of made two-pointers that made the difference and, frankly, moving the ball around. We got 33 assists and a democratized, well-spread-out number of assists. They won the game by popping the ball around and finding the right guy more often than not at the right time.
Almost to Jim Boylan's goal of 35 assists a game. Almost. I had to joke about Boylan because we heard him earlier in Jordan Malley's open. But they shot well. You're right. They shot over 53% from the floor. They also just were able to be competitive the entire time, which helps to win a game. So we saw that. They limited the runs, which I thought was pretty important. It was also encouraging to see, Dan, we've talked about how the Bulls, the second time around against an opponent this season, have not been lucky. I don't know the stats, but we've seen them play competitive games against playoff contending teams the first time, and it goes well. And then the second time, they've struggled. So this was the opposite scenario, getting the win over the Heat. And then, I don't know about you, but you talk about a weird game. The Heat collection of players. Like, when Trevor Ariza is still, like, your major three-point threat in the game.
Yeah, they had former DePaul star Max Strus out there.
Yeah, Max Strus was out there. Jimmy Butler missed that bunny at the end of the game. And I think we're talking about a different result. Butler has to be so mad at himself for that. He was anticipating contact, right?
Like he thought something else was happening at the rim and then it just didn't happen. And he just made sort of a phantom play.
Yeah. And I think was Kobe on him at that point in the lane? Somebody had gotten down the court quick. But I just remember seeing that missed bunny by Jimmy Butler, and I was like, oh, man. And Ariza was key for them late, but it was close. But fortunately, the Bulls were able to come away with a win, and I am encouraged by that. They needed a stop of themselves, with themselves, by themselves, and they got it. So we can breathe a little easier today.
They're 4-3 in 7 games without Zach LaVine. That's okay. They're doing what we thought they could do. And we can nitpick about some of the specifics of some of these games. But the bottom line is they've won more games than they've lost with a guy who was scoring 27 points a game, just removed completely from the lineup. A big reason for this has been the combined play of Nikola Vucevic and Daniel Theis, because Theis is, I don't know what a guy has to do to be a folk hero, but he's pretty close. He does cool stuff every game. There's something he does that you kind of haven't seen before. And even though he doesn't look athletic, he really is. Like, he covers ground quicker than you think he does, especially defensively, and because of his ridiculously long arms. There are plays that he makes where it looks like he's out of position, and then the moment he flicks his hand out there, you realize that he was setting it up the whole time.
Well, and as far as Theis is concerned, I don't think there's a better example of what you talk about when it comes to length being described in the NBA and just the parts of the court that you don't think he's actually covering, then that water polo play he had in the second quarter where he just, I don't know how else to describe it, just straightens out his arm and is able to get a bucket. And I don't know that I've ever seen that in a basketball game like that, at least an NBA one, but it really looked like a water polo play.
Well, he was fouled too, and I don't know how you get that, how you don't get that call. The other guy's got you in an arm lock. Like, he had to do that because his other arm wasn't free. I mean, ideally, you obviously would want to grab that with two hands and make a play, but his hands are so big and he's got such control that he didn't have the use of the other arm, which to me is a foul. Opponent taking away use of arm constitutes foul. And in this case, I guess it didn't. But, you know, Vucevic talked about some of this stuff with what their bigs are doing, this kind of old-fashioned physical style of basketball.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that we're trying to explore and try to use it to our advantage, and especially against a team like Miami who plays small a lot. We're going to have a size advantage, especially at the four. And Thad and Daniel, you know, did a great job tonight. You know, with the seals, you know, on rolls, you know, especially they switch, you know, sealing their man. And even if the ball doesn't go to them, you know, the a lot of times, especially in the second half, they were, you know, helping from the weak side really aggressively on the roll. And then, you know, we were able to get a lot of skips to the weak side and we made shots or, you know, get a drive, make extra plays. So it's definitely something that we can take advantage of. A lot of teams do play small. And since we, you know, we had a size eight, we can use that. And again, you know, we don't have Zach, which is, you know, a lot of, you know, offense for us that we're missing. So we have to find different ways to make up for that. But, you know, I think also we're able to do that because of Tyson's ability to defend on the other end, you know, smaller, you know, fours who can, you know, shoot and quicker. So that makes us being able to do that.
That's some really coachy stuff from Vucevic. When he talks about the big in screen roll, when he makes that dive to the basket and they switch it and you recognize a size mismatch, sealing your man doesn't only give you an opportunity for a quick post and a layup or an am one. It takes that guy out of the defensive rotation because you've walled him off. And I love what he just said about being able to get the ball back out and then skipping it. Because when you're effectively shielding a guy out of the play as a defender, you can gain the advantage for somebody else. And that is that's a critical piece of what he's talking about there, about continuity offense and about how one thing that you do against your guy, it may not benefit you necessarily in the moment, but it benefits the third guy. They had 33 assists, and it's that recognition, it's that level of basketball that lets you win a game against a team that's probably better than you are because you're doing some things like that matchup-wise.
Absolutely. And also, when you say that, you know who I thought of? Is the stretch that Coby White has had in Zach LaVine's stead. He has gotten better. And he has taken what you talked about, where you're learning by osmosis, not necessarily being that centerpiece, and you're improving. And I think that we can safely all say that we've seen growth out of him. Once again, I get concerned about what happens if and when LaVine comes back. Coby finishes with 17 points, 5 of 14 from the floor, 5 of 6 at the line. Got 5 rebounds and 6 assists. I will take that line out of Coby White.
Or you take the same production as a segment of his second unit work and say, keep doing, don't stop doing what you're doing, but do it as the leader of the second unit. To me, that's what I envision as this team gets better on a really good team. If he gets that kind of, you know, if the rate stats continue, if assist to turnover ratio and his percentages, if he's able to play at a certain level of efficiency as a second unit lead guard, I'm cool. I just hope he doesn't have to be a starter to do it. You know, you say that's you know, your concern. Mine is further down the road already. Like my every time I watch it now, every time I watch Tice, I feel a sense of loss. Because I don't know if they're going to be able to keep him. And
this is your anxiety.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's like, oh, this guy's better than I thought.
Yeah.
And he's not under contract next year. He has been a really important part of this team, especially without LaVine. I just love the way he plays, and I love the way he fits in on a good team, and I don't want to lose him. And now it's like, you know, you can have your feelings about Chris Bryant and Javier Baez and Wilson Contreras and Anthony Rizzo and all that. I'm thinking about that. I say, ooh, this is he's too important, and everybody around the league now is starting to recognize how good he is. So I hope they can work something out. I hope they can find the money by some combination of renunciations and letting go of cap holds and whatever you got to do to carve out enough space to keep him, because I really like his game.
Oh, absolutely. I think we all have placed a lot of importance on Daniel Theis, because defensively, where would this team be without him? Do you want to talk about that? Do you want to go to that dark place? You don't. Well,
they wouldn't be in the running for this little COVID-influenced end playoff spot,
fake
whatever
playoff.
You want to call it. Yeah, they wouldn't be. This is the fake playoff capital of the world here, right? I mean, whether it was the Blackhawks, the Bears, and now the Bulls, we love our fake playoffs, don't we?
Oh, yeah. If we didn't have the fake playoffs, we'd just be talking about straight mediocre teams. So how refreshing was it, too, to just see the tweet from the Bulls come down yesterday? That was just a picture of Daniel Theis after the game, and he said, "I take defense very personally." And I'm thinking, praise God, somebody dies. Because nobody else on this team, I don't know.
Quite naturally, I took that personally. It was
Troy Brown.
Let's hear from my man crush here. This is Daniel Theis on his fit with this Bulls team.
It's all positive. You guys know already, I care about the winning part. Said it doesn't matter for me, I want to win. I'm just frustrated with myself when we lose games like last game. Like we showed in the fourth quarter we can play, but we didn't do it in the first three quarters. The same when we played in Cleveland. Like we came from Boston, we played a great game defensively. We go to Cleveland, we get our ass like beat really. And then in the second half of the back-to-back in Charlotte, we play defense again. I think for us it's about we gotta find our consistency, especially on defensive end. And that's where I see my job, especially like on the defensive anchor. I take like defense really personally. So for me, it's about getting stops.
Getting stops. If you want to, if that's your point of pride, you can play for me. And to coming from him, where he's not looking to fill the stat sheet, even if he sometimes does. If you look at some of his per minute and per 48 stuff, he's a really, really effective player who sets a tone for some of these guys. And I don't want to see them without a defensive minded reserve big next year.
Absolutely not, especially when you know what the set looks like in theory with Vooch, Patrick Williams, and Zach LaVine. You know that those three are at least on the court. I also want to point out this about Theis, since we're in this man crush place about it. You know how you were talking about how Garrett Temple's finishing around the rim can be suspect?
Yes.
This is not the case with Theis. And Vooch pointed that out too. He talked about that and how he appreciates Theis's finishing around the rim. The water polo play from Sato, again, illustrates that pretty well. But it's something that I feel like we should note in this space.
I also wanted to point out, too, and I don't usually do this. I don't look at, like, the first possession of a game and say, well, I don't want to sort of impute meaning. But Patrick Williams leaping into the post, recognizing a mismatch, and just doing that little dive cut and making himself available like that, more of that. Be that aggressive. Make the guy have to pass it to you because you are where you are when you are. I like that a lot. And seeing him respond to it, and it was a nice finish, nice athletic finish on that. But if he starts doing more of that, that's going to open up so many things for him and everybody else if he shows a willingness to do it.
Are you more calm about the Bulls after they showed you this at least brief improvement against a team they saw in the second game playing them twice in a row?
Yeah, I think they're figuring it out. I think we got to give them a little bit of latitude because of the lack of practice time. I do. I just, if a team can't work on what it has to do and every game they're figuring it out, I more consistent awareness of the level of defensive effort is what we're asking for. And if whatever this looks like to start next season, if they're going to kind of come in and and know that this is a new dedication. I don't want the return of Zach LaVine to mean it's okay to get lazy on the other end. You know, Jordan Malley points this out, that the three Bulls players with the best individual defensive rating over this seven-game stretch, Lauri Markkanen, Patrick Williams, and Kobe White, all three also have positive net ratings.
Did not see that happening. That's a great stat from Jordan. And I am so interested to see what happens in their next game against our old friend whose winning streak just ended, Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks.
Yeah, they've been playing great. There are Knicks fans who are cautiously actually trying to find what is some semblance of optimism. And it's funny to watch how they try to deal with these feelings that are so foreign to them.
Oh, man. Like, I have a good buddy who's a Knicks fan, and I was talking to him a little bit yesterday. We were both watching the game on the phone, because that happens. Laughing at how Trevor Ariza seems like he's 85, but he's really only 35. And then he was in the dumps because the Knicks finally lost. So they're 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they're fourth in the Eastern Conference. Them and the Hawks are tied. Like, they're not just hanging out in the playoffs. Like, they're making the playoffs. You expect them to at least win a round, don't you?
We'll see. Just always enjoy the Tom Thibodeau honeymoon while you can. This is the most fun before it turns dark, unless he's found a way to change his ways, which I find highly unlikely. She's Leila Rahimi. I'm Dan Bernstein. We were flipping last night with the Cub game, and it looked like the game was over, and then it wasn't over because Chris Bryant continued doing what he's been doing, and then it was just sort of dragged out and unsatisfying. We need to talk about a problematic starting rotation and a particular pitcher who was supposed to be reliable, who has been anything but, and he knows it, and he talked about it, and we'll hear from Zach Davies next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Outfield deep. Bryant leads the 0-1. Smacked on the ground, right to second, one hop. Fielded by Albies, goes to Swanson. There's the force. That's the ball game. Sharply hit ball by Happ, but a one-hopper right to Ozzie Albies, and the Braves win game one of this four-game series. The final 8-7 Atlanta.
That was Pat Hughes on the call on Sports Radio 670 The Score. It was another rough one for Zach Davies. And the numbers are less than pretty for the 28-year-old veteran whose name we heard a lot when the Cubs were talking about giving up Yu Darvish. And, well, you know, Zach Davies, he's no slouch. Zach Davies is pretty good. You know, look at what he's done. Okay, you know, I agree. But so far, that old 9.47 ERA, the 6.20 FIP and 6.24 XFIP, a little too chunky. Right now.
Hit me with the whip. What's the whip?
The whip is on a different page. I'm going to have to find that. And that, you know, that you just made that a drop with you saying.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, I'm okay with it because I like that stat.
Yeah,
so
the whip is 2.21.
Oh, I was wondering if it was over two.
Yep.
you just got hit with the
old 2.21 on the. Oh, yikes. That's not good. Well, he's enough of a vet to know that it's not good and it's got to get better. And he admitted that it probably has never been this bad.
Hey, Zach, I know you said after your last start that the when things are going well, it's easy to pitch. When things are going tough, you really got to focus on, you know, what's going on to get yourself better. With this stretch you've been on to start the season, what are some things that you're identifying in bullpens and even during games that – you know, it's kind of been some of the reason that you started slowly.
It's really just comes down to pitch execution. You know, it's just not there. Probably one of the worst stretches of my career. And, you know, it is early, but at any point it sucks. You know, putting your team down 4 runs in the first inning, you know, having a claw back and you know, You want the Chris Bryant home run to be like the go ahead. You don't want it to be the have to come from behind. You want it to build the momentum and You know, it's just been tough. I don't think it's really anything too much mechanically or pitches. It's just, you know, going out there and performing.
Zach, as far as what you had in your first start this year, what is it that you need to get back to other than, you know, commanding your fastball the way you want?
You know, just commanding the zone, being able to throw strikes and get ahead of hitters. Right now it's falling behind guys and throwing into hitters counts. You know, it's really just execution.
Yeah, it's more than that. Even the first inning illustrated Davies' struggles, especially with pitch selection and execution. That changeup wasn't hitting above 80. That is how Ozzie Albies, Osuna, and Darnold all got on base. They all got on base because they turned on like a 78, 79 mile an hour changeup.
There has to be a little bit more deception to it, or this is maybe something where you get into the pitch lab and just say maybe we pronate a little bit more, give it a little bit a more downward movement rather than it just being a velocity differential that you try to get them, make sure that it's a little more difficult to square up. And this is a guy you can work with in that regard and who needs to be fine-tuned and needs to be maximized, but it's got to be better than this. It has to be. Like you say, give him a chance. And for a game, when you see that... That game didn't feel like the score looked. Does that make any sense?
That game was drunk.
Yeah, it kind of dragged. And what we're not talking about and probably should be is how brazenly Charlie Morton was putting substances on the ball.
I mean, I didn't mind it as much because the results weren't that frustrating for the Cubs. Morton was hanging some curveballs. And if he's going to hang that curve, then the Cubs did what they were supposed to do, which was take advantage of it. I was more encouraged by the fact that offense answered the bell against the Braves. And not just late. Like we've heard Sarah Langs talk about, they had struggled late. Atlanta had previously in games. But they were keying up on Charlie Morton. As much as the Braves hitters were watching, obviously, for Davies' changeup, which was clear, I feel like the mistakes that Morton made with that curve, one of them to Chris Bryant that resulted in the home run, were as much there. But you're right. The reason we're probably not talking about it as much is because Cubs hitters were still turning on stuff.
Well, but that's fine. But that's independent of everything baseball said it was going to do. And if you're going to take the baseballs that Trevor Bauer is using and you're going to start looking at spin rate comparisons and examining the baseballs, Morton wasn't even trying to hide anything he was doing. He was taking you saw him with the rosin bag on the back of his neck and making whatever goop he was making on the back, reaching all the way down his back for something on there, where not only Ron Coomer on the radio broadcast, but JD and Boog were pointing. Boog was even mentioning the brand of sunscreen. He's like, yeah, that's where the bullfrog is. That's got to be where the bullfrog is. And he was just, it was so clear. And this a guy, too, who, of course, when he was in Houston, saw those late career jumps in velocity and in spin rate. And everybody said what was going on. Everybody knew. Like, obviously, they're using substances to add spin and add velocity. And he, as a guy whose numbers went through the roof, was obvious. So when they start comping his numbers, I don't know what they can do now. But can they go back pre-Houston when he started doing some of this stuff? Probably not. But... get those baseballs. Look at those baseballs. Talk to him. If this is anything serious, that's a classic example of somebody in front of you just rubbing your nose in it.
I feel like bullfrog is always the thing mentioned because that's what people use. Like that doesn't bother me as much. But it's the idea that Morton has made a living ever since he joined the Astros from his breaking pitches and that curveball in particular. And you wonder how it got so good. But if hitters are going to turn on it the way they did last night, he's going to have to figure out another mode of operandi.
Yeah, that's fine. But I don't think that can apply. The result can't have anything to do with the policing of it. If you're serious about it, you take the results out of it. It's either you're doing it or you're not doing it. I understand that that has an effect on how we feel about it. Like, if it's not hurting your team, you don't get all crazy about it. But if you're actually the enforcement body, that has to be independent of it. If you are putting something on the ball in the attempt to gain an advantage, that's what matters. If you're cracking down, and if you're not, don't.
And this is why I said that your guy, Trevor Bauer, should have just leaned into the whole thing of what he was doing, which was showing everybody what and how he did it to affect Torque. And I don't think anything would have happened to him that large, relatively speaking. After I said that on the radio, I did think later on that the reason he might have stopped wasn't because of the cause, but perhaps because of his fellow players in the union.
He's never cared about that before.
Dude, all it takes is a couple discussions. Like, as much as he thought he was taking one for the team and doing this, he might have also been taking one for the team and ceasing to do this.
Maybe. I generally default to him being relatively selfish in that regard and not necessarily caring about how what he does affects anybody else.
The hero we deserve, Dan. Meanwhile, I was also sad to see that Wilson Contreras' 491-foot home run was corrected to 456.
Well, now we got to go back and look at the Pete Alonso home run. If you're going to be correcting things, if there's like a law of conservation of home run distance, can we tack that on? If they're going to take it away from him, can we then move that over to Pete Alonso's Wrigley home run?
Out of principle, we should probably discuss it. You know who might be a good candidate for this topic is one Craig Calcaterra at 10.
Oh, there's all kinds of things to talk about with him because the baseball season has had all sorts of sub-stories and narratives, and apparently a lot of people are paying attention to plenty of baseball right now, getting back into our – it's amazing what getting back into the natural rhythm of something does for the way people connect to it and the way they feel about it. Ryan Pace just, quote-unquote, talked. So we need to bring some of this back. This is he was there, there were words coming out of his mouth, there were questions that were asked, and then we'll find out if we learned anything about the Bears. It's the immensely frustrating Ryan Pace Bears fan experience continues, but you'll hear from him in his own words about their preparation for the draft on Thursday, and we'll be doing Who's Your Guy coming your way at 10:20. And if you're asking about all the draft coverage, we've got you're absolutely taken care of, because Thursday the draft show is going to be on our sister station WBBM News Radio 780. That's from 6:30 to 10 p.m. and it's Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Hub Arkish, Dan Pompey, Mark Grody, Chris Emma, and then from 10 to midnight, Grody's going to be on the score after Cubs baseball. Full coverage throughout the weekend too. Saturday 11 a.m. to 1:35, Mully and Joniak and Thayer and Grody. Sunday after Cubs starting at 4, Anthony Heron is going to wrap everything up. So the score is going to be your place along with our sister station WBBM News Radio 780 for wall-to-wall Bears draft coverage. You'll hear from Ryan Pace next on The Score.
It's been very collaborative.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. What direction will Ryan Pace go with the 20th pick? Will they trade up or will they trade up? Or will they trade up? Or will they trade up? Will they trade up?
Even Brad Biggs did it today. Brad Biggs in the Tribune has them trading up to the 4th pick and taking
Adam Trey Hogue Lance. Has him trading down. Adam Hogue has him trading down to 25.
Fine. The history, by the way, when you have 4 quarterbacks taken in the first round, did you see this? The Biggs put this in there. You want to throw up? These are the times that the 4th quarterback off the board has gone in the first round. It's happened 6 times. And that 4th quarterback in the first round has been Jordan Love, Josh Rosen, Brandon Weeden, Christian Ponder, J.P. Losman, and Rex Grossman.
Oh.
How do you like that history, huh? Well, Ryan Pace does his thing every year where he goes in front of a hot microphone and ostensibly provides information regarding the Bears' intentions, state of the team, whatever you want to call it. And after he opened by acknowledging the struggles and the concerns for Steve McMichael with his disclosure that he's suffering from ALS, he then got into, well, I almost said specifics. It's not specifics. He made things about I don't know what to call it. I'm at wit's end.
He said words.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Pace.
All right, hey, good morning, guys. Hope you guys are well. We've done this before. It's always a unique time of year. I hope you guys understand we can't get into the details. I'm sorry in advance for any questions I can't answer, but I promise I'll do my best. Couple quick thoughts on the draft before we open it up for questions. Everyone with our team is excited this week. Our first draft with a first round pick since Roquan in 2018. The quantity of picks we have with 8 total draft picks. It's all part of the roster building process that we go through, the different phases of the offseason, from re-signing our own players to free agency and out of the draft. And you know, every team in the NFL had a lot of challenges this year as we navigated through a much different college season, a much different draft process as we prepared for this draft. And you know, you got to get creative, you got to get opportunistic in different ways we gather information. And that preparation for us is a testament to a lot of people, from our scouts to our coaches, to our medical staff. I can go on and on. George and Ted providing the resources and the understanding of the different times that we're operating in. But we're ready for this week. We're excited to make our team better this week. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
I'm curious with this group. I'm not asking if you're going to take a quarterback. But as you look at these, the 5 quarterbacks everybody's talking to, how do they compare just rating-wise or grade-wise to the other top, the first round, top 10, top 15 quarterbacks you've seen in the last 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I would say, you know, to be honest, Hub, just the depth, the totality of that group, to be honest with you, it is deep this year, you know, and they're all different, and every team's going to evaluate each one of these players different, no different than any position. And I think you feel it. I think, you know, not going through every position, but every year, of course, you feel different areas of the draft where there's depth, you know, and sometimes, you know, we've been able to take advantage of that. I think, day 3 picks for us where there's been depths in that area of the draft, like when we took Tariq or Eddie Jackson or Mooney last year, those were areas where I thought there was a lot of depth, and it trickled into even day 3 because of that.
Obviously, you've never picked outside the top 10 in the first round since you got here. Knowing where you guys are at number 20, how do you describe the number of different contingency plans you guys have to be both accepting of and excited for, knowing the number of different ways that this whole thing could break on Thursday night?
Yeah, it is unique, Dan. I was just, you know, looking over the last 10 years and the players that have gone in this range of the draft. And as you look back on the hit rates of those players, you know, was there common denominators as you look in this range of the draft and those players? It's interesting. And it is harder. Like when you're picking in the top 10, it's very easy to have 100% consensus throughout your building. I mean, we could have 15 reports on a player, and in the top 10, everybody's got this guy paid. But when you go further back, you know, it gets different, you know, and I like to take everyone's opinions in, and you're kind of weighing all that. And then I just think as an organization, we got to be ready for every single scenario. However this thing plays out, however this board falls, that's where all the preparation comes into play. And I feel like we're in that spot, whether it's trading up, staying put, trading back, all those things are in play for us, and it just comes with the preparation.
Not having the combine, not having the, you know, the visits and everything, does that make it harder when you put together your draft board at the top of the draft? Or is that more challenging not having those interactions when it comes to maybe guys later day 2, later day 3? Which one's more challenging?
I think it all is, Jeff. And I think, you know, you look at it as a challenge, and we've taken it on like that. But yeah, you're right. Like, not, you know, access during the season was different. Players opting out, you know, that was different. We're watching tape on guys sometimes a year old, you know, and you're looking at that and you're watching them a year removed, and now you're putting weight on the pro days. And how do they look at the pro day? You know, has their body changed? Have they maintained? Have they improved? All the different fluctuations that can take place. Like you said, no combine, only 3 people allowed per pro day. Not able to take those players out to dinner before or after the pro day, those things weighed. So it's challenges throughout. I mean, we had our medical meetings last week. And some of that's been a challenge, to be honest with you. So I just think that's where we lean on the continuity of our staff and the experience and get creative on how we access some of that data and obtain some of that data. We lean on a lot of our resources. But I'm not going to lie, Jeff, it has been challenging. But that's part of that's, you know, the excitement of the job, and we've taken that on. And I feel like we're in a really good spot.
In past years, you talk about the conviction you have on a player when you trade up for somebody. And we know you haven't been afraid to do it. What kind of qualities, regardless of position, are you looking for when you do that? And how have those qualities maybe changed or evolved as you've gone through this process over the years?
Yeah, I think when we trade up for guys, it's the first thing that comes to my mind, Kevin, is the conviction that we have throughout our building. You know, so you know when there's kind of a consensus pick, and you can feel it from our coaches and scouts. And I know that everybody's going to be excited when we make that selection and walk out of that room. It gives me more confidence to go do that. And then all the other things that we value beyond the physical traits that I think gets refined every year, right? It gets refined with the experiences and that we've learned throughout these drafts. So, you know, we talk about guys having Bears makeup and all the cogs that we value in a Bears player. If a guy has the physical traits, we have consensus throughout our building, and he has the makeup that we're looking for, it all factors into it. And I mean, I could go on and on, Kevin, the medical, the intelligence, the football makeup. There's just so many factors that go into it that as you're putting this puzzle together, this pie chart together in each player, that kind of gives you confidence when to go up, you know. And then there'll be situations too that we've thought about when if there's enough players there and there's enough depth there, we could very easily go back and obtain more picks. So that's an option too.
In terms of the 20th pick in the first round, obviously without naming names, how do you approach that? Do you look at like maybe a cluster of 5 players, 6 players, 7 players who you might be interested in, and then maybe that tells you how comfortable you are moving up or down? Or how do you kind of approach that versus maybe having a top 10 pick?
Yeah, I mean, we have, our board stacked by position, then it's stacked. We call it a value line. So we have, picks 1 through 32, picks in the second round and third round. So we can see how we would value and how we would stack it up in the first round, you know, and we know where there's a line. For us, there might be 35 players that we all think that are valuable of first round, drafting in the first round. There might be 28, there might be 25, whatever it is, we know where that line is. So I think for us, based on how the board falls, that's when our game plan can change on, hey, we think we want to go up, we want to stay put, or we want to go back. You know, we kind of line them up that way, and it's part of the collaborative process that we go through as we do this.
Barf.
No, that's not even true. That's not even true. When he's talking about what causes him to trade up to Kevin Fishbane, that's not true. He traded up regardless of everybody else. What? That's... He says he's not going to lie.
We all have
that wasn't
bingo.
Even true.
No, we all, this is like Ryan Pace bingo. Which way do you want it? You want vertical, horizontal, diagonal? You want whole card? I mean, the totality.
Blackout.
Was it totality Blackout. Of depth or depth of totality and collaboration and George and Ted and everybody in the building and our conviction and taking people out to dinner? Oh, my
that
God.
That wasn't true either.
Why do I bother? Why do I bother?
Like, you didn't take everybody out to dinner. But, you got lucky, perhaps.
Yeah, the guy you should have taken out to dinner, you didn't. The 773 says the depth of totality. Is he naming Joe Satriani albums?
That's a really good text.
I love that. Joe Satriani, the giant chrome mosquito of guitarists. But, I mean...
And y'all complain about the Twitch royalty-free music. Man. But that's kind of the point here. I told Jordan while we were listening to isolate that answer to Kevin Fishbane, because that is simply not what has happened in the past.
No, that he just gets fixated on a guy, and regardless of what anybody else is doing, he trades up.
And doesn't tell anybody. So that didn't happen.
It's so funny. I love how now reporters are even like, yeah, I know you're not going to answer this, but I know you can't get, like, when do reporters allow, like, you can keep still trying to make him say stuff he doesn't want to say. That's the whole point. It's supposed to be adversarial. You're not supposed to say, I know you can't do this, and I know you're not going to say this. Then what's everyone, what are we doing here?
Well, you have to couch that when you're asking a question to get some sort of substance, because otherwise the verbal energy is spent on saying, I can't say X, Y, and Z. And you've already said that a million times. So you have to acknowledge that in order to get them to talk about something else. He did say that the Bears, or his assessment of the NFL depth of quarterback class in this draft is large. Okay, so you know that there's a lot of quarterbacks in this draft class. And if I were you, I'd be scared to talk about the quarterbacks in this draft, too.
But the texters are so good. So the conviction of the scouting and coaching staffs, yet John Fox had no idea they were taking Mitchell Trubisky. The 708 says, sweet mother of God, is it weird I'm praying that a bus hits me? It might be hard given that I work in my basement these days, but Jesus, take the wheel.
That text needs to be, I don't know what we should do. I feel like we should have a text of the week, and it would be really hard because we've had some amazing texts to the text line recently.
It's so good. The 309 texter, the seven layers of hell also have depth. Isn't it nine? I thought seven was the seven layer dip. Are we confusing dip with hell? Is often the case.
Dante's Inferno, there were nine circles of hell.
Nine circles of hell, right?
I don't know. Maybe there's seven.
No,
do we really want to know?
Maybe he really hates seven-layer dip, and maybe he's conflating the two.
No. You leave the Julasco and any other taco dip out of this. They don't deserve to be talked about during this. They are good things.
What's in seven-layer dip? Is it like, is it beans, avocado, cheese?
It's collaboration, totality.
Stop it.
The depth of totality.
The depth of totality.
Referencing a dinner that you might have taken somebody to, multiple people in the room.
I can't take people to dinner. What are you? You're complaining about not being able to have dinner with a guy at St. Elmo's Steakhouse.
Aren't we all?
You can't go have your shrimp cocktail at St. Elmo's.
Hey, I just made a funny dating joke, and you just blew right through it. See, that's what Ryan Pace puts everybody through. That's it. So what I heard him say was the Bears are totally trading up to get Mac Jones. I think that's what I heard.
We're going to trade up for Trey Lance or one of these guys. But, man, that history of the fourth quarterback taken in the first round is really kind of gross. I mean, obviously, Jordan Love, the book is still out. He might end up being good. But
well, and then there was that weird vote of confidence today or yesterday in Green Bay, you know?
Yeah, there's been a lot of that. San Francisco doing some of that too. But yeah, this is your list here of the fourth quarterback taken when in the first round. It is the law firm of Love, Rosen, Whedon, Ponder, Lossman, and Grossman.
Whedon? Was he 35? Like, who was before him?
Oh boy, all right. Well, that was Ryan Pace. We got to go. Craig Calcaterra straight ahead. Baseball coming up on The Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.